Hi, everybody. Randy Schuler here for the Beauty Brains, the only podcast where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And today I'm introducing another one of our lost episodes from 2010. I'm kind of glad we have these lost episodes to play, otherwise you'd have no show today, because it's really hard to get Perry to do any work over the holidays. So, now you get to listen to the scintillating cerebellum and the ever-loquacious left brain talk about whether natural ingredients are better than synthetics, why some fragrances are so long-lasting, and how home microdermabrasion works.
I'm your host, Cerebellum, and with me, as always, is the eccentric, though interesting, left brain. Hi, left brain.
Hello, Sarah.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. Maybe we should explain to some of our new listeners the whole point behind our podcast.
That's a good idea.
The Beauty Brains podcast is a show about beauty products where real cosmetic chemists, like ourselves, answer your beauty questions and talk about the science of cosmetics. So you would consider yourself a real cosmetic chemist?
I'm what you would call a cosmetic formulator.
Well, we've got a fully packed show for you today. We'll be answering some beauty product questions, as always. We're going to talk about whether natural chemicals are better than synthetic. We're going to review a shampoo. And of course, we're going to finish with a fun little beauty science quiz. But before we get started, how was your Thanksgiving there, left brain?
I had a pretty good Thanksgiving. Ate probably too much, but
yeah,
what we all do.
Yeah.
But got to spend it with my family, and I'm always very amused by hanging out with kids. They always are very interesting to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. You have a lot of nieces and nephews?
I do. There's like 10 of them or something, The oldest is maybe 11 or 12 or something like that. But then it goes down to like, I don't know, 5-year-olds. They're just very interesting to talk to. You know, we don't get a lot of kids around here at Brains Publishing.
Yeah. Though it would be great to get some young cosmetic, aspiring cosmetic chemists, wouldn't it?
Well, certainly. And I always try to encourage them to think about scientific things. Although when I ask them questions about how far the sun is from the earth, they just snub their noses and are generally not interested. Which, incidentally, is 93 million miles.
Oh, well, thanks for that little solar system tidbit for the day. Well, I know we have a full show today, should we get started on our first question?
I think so.
Excellent. Our first question is from Jansen. Jansen asks, hi to both left and right brains. I am currently using an eau de parfum called Allure Homme Sport by Chanel, and it is the most long-lasting fragrance ever. And yes, I am a bloke. One of my chemist friends told me that this is due to the exclusive alcohol that Chanel uses in their perfumes, as it probably has a lower boiling point, and so the fragrances are more volatile. I wonder how true the statement is. Thanks in advance.
How true the statement is?
Yeah.
I don't think it's so much true that they're using any kind of special alcohol.
Right. In fact, I would say it's decidedly not true that they're using any different alcohol than any other perfumes.
And actually, Sarah, this is an area that you worked a lot in, right?
It is. I have a bit of a specialty in fragrance. So we appreciate the question from Jansen, and we love to hear from people across the pond, of course, and male users. So this is exciting.
Yeah, the Beauty Brains is really international.
Oh, yeah. So I've heard. So Jansen, probably the reason you think this fragrance is so long-lasting has not a lot to do with the alcohol content, but actually how the fragrance is built. Fragrances are composed of top notes, middle notes, and bottom notes. The top notes are the most volatile, which means that those notes evaporate quickly and reach your nose first. And those notes tend to be very light and fresh. They are fruity or citrus. Perfumes that have a lot of fruity or citrus notes, they tend to disappear more quickly. And fragrances that have more middle notes or bottom notes tend to last a bit longer. Middle notes are usually floral scents like rose, violet, lily, and bottom notes are notes that are woody or smoky or musky. So this Chanel Allure fragrance is most likely composed of a lot of bottom notes. So it's probably a very musky, smoky, or ambery type of fragrance. And those fragrances will last longer because those notes are less volatile, which means, again, they don't evaporate as quickly, so they last longer on your skin.
Whenever I hear the term musky, for some reason, I always think of beavers. Do beavers smell, right?
I've never really been up close and personal with a beaver, but you bring up an interesting point, Left Brain, that musk was originally from an animal. Now, of course, musk are all synthetically derived, but in the origins of perfumery, musk fragrance came from animals, but that's not really looked highly upon these days. So a lot of animal-derived compounds are now synthetically made in a lab. And some people actually can't even smell musks. That's called an anosmia. So
really?
So certain people can't even identify a musk note. I don't know what percentage. I used to know that. But there are some percentage of people that can't smell musk notes.
So these fragrances that aren't going to last very long, these are your citrus ones. So people aren't going to smell like lemons for very long.
Right. Citrus notes are extremely volatile. So when you smell a fragrance, actually, when you're deciding what fragrance you want to purchase, it's good to smell that fragrance three times.
I think
you smell it initially, and that initial smell of a fragrance, you're going to smell those volatile notes first. So you're going to smell those fruity, citrusy notes first. Then I would wait about 5 or 10 minutes, and you're going to start smelling the middle notes. So those floral notes I was talking about. And then come back in an hour and smell it again. And then you will smell the bottom notes. And then you can really decide how you're going to like that fragrance in a long term, because it is going to smell different initially versus, an hour or two later.
Of course. That could make for a long trip in Sephora, right?
It could, but I could spend hours in Sephora, Left Brain. It is one of my favorite stores. So it really, when you're looking for a new fragrance, the first impression may not be the only impression of that fragrance, because it will change a bit. And fragrances like this Chanel Allure fragrance tend to be very, bottom heavy, or they have a lot of those less volatile notes. They will last longer. So that's probably the long explanation for why the Chanel Allure fragrance lasts so long versus some other fragrances.
Yeah,
probably not anything to do with the alcohol. Pretty much all fragrances use ethanol, and that's not really a big trade secret.
Okay, that was a good question. Thanks, Jansen,
for your question. I love getting fragrance questions. So if anybody else has fragrance questions, please post them on the blog. Do we have another question, Left Brain?
Here it is.
Oh, here we go, from Liz. Liz asks, tell me about those drugstore microdermabrasion kits, such as the Neutrogena Advanced Solutions At-Home Microdermabrasion System. Do they really work? Are they effective for reducing the appearance of small minor scars from acne and the texture of skin overall? How is microdermabrasion different from regular exfoliating?
Well, this is a good question.
Yes, it is a good question.
Yeah, of course. I wonder if we would ever ask a question and say, oh, this isn't a good question.
Yeah, that's true. If it was a bad question, we wouldn't ask it on the podcast. But hey.
It's a good lead-in. So, microdermabrasion. First, we should discuss what microdermabrasion is.
Yes.
And essentially, it's a fancy way to say an exfoliator. Now, if you're talking about something that a dermatologist would do, this comes from the American Academy of Plastic Surgeons. Microdermabrasion is a skin freshening technique that helps to repair the facial skin and from the effects of the sun, from scarring, or from the effects of aging. Typically what happens is a plastic surgeon will take a device like a little sandblaster and then spray these little tiny crystals across your face, and then there will be some suction which will remove the dead outer layer of the skin. So essentially what you do is you mechanically remove the top layer of skin.
Right.
And then what this does is it stimulates the living cells underneath the top layer to start producing more collagen and more skin cells, and essentially you get a quicker turnover and your skin gets to be thicker. So that's what real microdermabrasion does. I actually had microdermabrasion done.
You did?
I did, yes.
When?
Well, I'll save the entire story for another time, but, I got that, I took the chainsaw to the face and got that scar on my nose.
Left Brain loves this story. Oh, my gosh, it's like his favorite
It's a little thing. But the point was, after I got my scar and I got stitched up, I had to go to this plastic surgeon to get a series of these microdermabrasions to make the scar lessen, I guess, and to make it blend in with my natural skin.
Hmm.
But
it's quite a story. I have also had microdermabrasion, but not for such a crazy incident, just because I went to the spa, a meta spa, as it's known, to get a microdermabrasion.
A meta, like in medical?
Right. It's a new thing. Well, maybe not that new, but I'm sure our listeners are familiar with the concept of getting sort of, I'm going to say, professional skincare treatments in a spa-like atmosphere.
So what the microdermabrasion is supposed to do is take off that top layer of skin. And everyone should know that the top layer of skin is really dead skin. And you don't have living cells in your skin until you get down to a layer called the dermis. The top layer is the stratum corneum, and that's part, the top part of what's known as the epidermis. But then below the epidermis is where the living cells are, and that's where all your skin growing takes place. So anyway, what happens is if you can strip down that top layer, some layers of the stratum corneum, that will send signals down to your dermis to start reproducing cells and reproducing collagen, and that's going to help to refreshen your skin, essentially, which I think is what you had done at the MediSpa.
Yes. Now, how is this different than the Neutrogena kit that you can buy at the drugstore?
Ah, well, this is a good question. And it's basically, the answer is that the stuff you do at the dermatologist mm-hmm. is going to really work. And the stuff you do at home, will have some effect. But it's not going to be nearly as effective.
Why not?
Well, essentially because the home products are not stripping down the skin as well. They aren't going to take as many layers off. I mean, thankfully, can you imagine if you gave somebody the power to just strip their skin off?
Yeah, that sounds painful, actually.
No, this is why we have doctors do it. But a product like the Neutrogena at-home microdermabrasion, it's going to be a good exfoliator, and it actually uses some of the original technology, which was aluminum oxide crystals, to help to essentially scrape the top layer of your skin and help to remove that. It's really, if you can think of it as like sandpaper for your face.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It sounds a little unpleasant.
Yeah. I mean, you are stripping your skin, so it's not like a soft thing.
Right. So essentially, the Neutrogena is a good exfoliator, but probably not as effective as getting a professional microdermabrasion treatment.
Right, exactly. And, you know, if you want to try it out, it's certainly worth trying. I'm not sure if you want to go with the Neutrogena one, which at the time when I first looked at it, it was about $35 for the kit. You could just try something like the St. Ives Apricot Scrub, which also is an exfoliator, and it's only about $3.
Wow. Well, I have used the St. Ives Apricot Scrub and the Neutrogena microdermabrasion, and I've gotten a professional microdermabrasion. So.
Wow. You've used it a lot. So what is yours?
I like to exfoliate. What can I say?
You do. And your skin is glowing.
Well, I don't know about that. It's a little chilly here in Chicago today, so maybe that's why it's glowing, but I definitely would say that the professional microdermabrasion gives you, your skin is baby soft. I mean, it really feels incredibly soft and smooth. And if you do it on a regular basis, I'm sure you would notice some improvement in scars or sun damage. But I do think the Neutrogena, I personally like the Neutrogena microdermabrasion scrub because I found it to be less irritating than the St. Ives scrub. The St. Ives scrub is those walnut shells in there are a bit harsh for my skin, but I know there are people that really love it, so that's just my personal opinion, but I have a bit of sensitive skin. So, you know, it's really one of those things that, you know, we're trying, and honestly, for $3, the St. Ives scrub is a great deal. So,
yeah, the bottom line is microdermabrasions at home aren't going to work as well as the ones you get at the doctor.
Right.
And between, like, an expensive microdermabrasion kit and a less expensive product, you just have to try both of them to see which one you like better.
Exactly.
They'll work probably about the same level.
Right. Well, another in-depth conversation there, Left Brain. We're chatty today, huh?
We are chatty today.
Maybe there should be a dress code at Beauty Brands. It's quite an outfit you're wearing today.
What, you don't like my plaid shirt?
Just for our listening audience, Left Brain is sporting what appears to be a Greatest American Hero t-shirt and a large blue plaid flannel shirt.
Well, you know, the greatest American hero is the best TV show of all time.
Well, that's highly debatable. But anyway, so we should move on to our next topic, which is some beauty news. So what do we have on the docket today, Left Brain?
Well, there's a story that I wanted to talk about, which I see versions of this a lot on the internet, so it doesn't really surprise me. But essentially, the headline is this. Consumers believe natural ingredients are healthier.
We do hear a lot of this, don't we?
So this is a story about a national online survey done by a company called Data Monitor. They are a market research company, essentially.
And yes, I'm familiar with them.
They do all sorts of studies. But anyway, according to Data Monitor, 57% of consumers said they were either extremely concerned or somewhat concerned about knowing the ingredients used in their products. And 52% of the people questioned online said that they thought natural ingredients were healthier, but only, of course, a minority of people believed that they were as effective. The story is saying is that more than half the people believe that natural ingredients in cosmetics are safer for you, but they're a little skeptical that they work as well. And I would say for the second piece, that's pretty astute of them, because generally natural ingredients don't work as well. Now, the first part about them being safer, that's kind of a dubious claim.
Yes.
And actually, claims about natural ingredients and natural products when it comes to cosmetic, they always strike me as a little weird, because cosmetics in general are very safe products. I don't always understand the backlash about it, but I guess what happens is that in the country, around the world, I guess probably, there is a thing I call chemophobia, where people are just afraid of chemicals. In fact, just the word chemical, I think people are afraid of it, don't you think?
Absolutely. Which I think is a little strange, because chemicals make life better, really.
Well, you know, the other thing is that people, when you think about the word chemical, people don't understand that everything is a chemical.
Right.
Like this the wood on this desk.
The air that we breathe.
The air we breathe is a chemical. So I don't really, actually, natural ingredients are chemicals, right? So
right.
I have a hard time understanding what people really mean when they say they're afraid of chemicals. The other thing is that you talk about synthetics. It's often synthetics, when we were talking about the fragrance, often synthetics are ingredients that are copied from nature. So
right.
So you find an ingredient like musk in nature, and you can isolate that, as crafty chemists we are.
Yes.
And then we can figure out the chemical structure, and then we can make it from other things.
Right. And a lot of times this is better. In the case of fragrance, sometimes, you know, natural ingredients, they're difficult to find. They're difficult to source. So we're actually saving things that are rare in nature, so we can synthetically create them, which makes them less expensive, makes them actually more sustainable, because we're not destroying some natural elements. So in the case of fragrance, at least, a lot of times that synthetic is preferable over the natural. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. And then the other thing is, you know, natural things are home to a lot of bacteria and viruses and fungi. And if you actually use natural products, you know, food spoils, and there's a reason, because they've got microbes in it. When you use synthetic ingredients, you can actually purify things and actually make them more safe to use.
Right, right.
Another point is that not all natural things are good anyway. You know, snake venom is natural, and you wouldn't want to put that on your skin.
No.
Some people actually market it that way. You know, Botox, which is a highly toxic ingredient, is, of course, natural.
Right.
So
it's all the rage, you know, Botox. Now there's Botox parties, I've heard.
Botox parties?
Yeah. They come to your house and all your friends line up and get injected.
Is it like one of those candle parties?
Yeah, it's the new candle party. No more Tupperware parties. It's Botox, baby.
Wow. So are your friends going to do this? Or?
I don't know. I've heard of some of my friends doing this. I'm a little wary. I don't think I have that many wrinkles yet.
Well, yeah, you're too young to do it, right?
I know, right?
Absolutely. You think I need it?
I don't know. Not quite yet, but you do have those lines between your eyes there.
Well, Fortunately, I don't notice such things.
So, Left Brain, what's our bottom line on this story?
So, the bottom line on this is this. Natural ingredients are not safer. Synthetic ingredients are not more dangerous. But there are good natural ingredients and there are bad synthetic ingredients. So I don't want to paint everything with a broad brush here.
Right.
But the idea that if you're buying a natural cosmetic, that you're getting a safer product, that's just absolutely wrong. You're not buying safer products. They aren't safer. They're not using ingredients that are better for you than the ingredients that are put out by companies like Unilever or L'Oreal. All of the ingredients that are in cosmetics are safety tested before they're put on the market. And certainly big companies don't want to be poisoning their consumers.
Right.
So natural products are generally good products. So I don't mean to disparage any natural products. And but on the other hand, that doesn't mean that products put out by big companies who use synthetic ingredients are bad.
Well, and wouldn't you also say that a lot of products that are so, you know, quote unquote natural aren't necessarily any more natural than the synthetic products? They're just marketed that way.
The truth is, have you ever run into a shampoo bush? You know?
Right.
Or
conditioner
does
bush.
Does lipstick
yes.
grow out of the ground? No. Cosmetics, right. by their nature, are not natural. If you really are afraid of chemicals and you don't want exposure, you shouldn't use any cosmetics. They aren't really necessary to live a good life.
Right.
I mean, you might.
Well,
smell
I would
bad.
Be. I would be upset, but that's fine.
All right.
Moving on.
We ready for the quiz?
Well, do you want to take the quiz? You want to talk about our shampoo today?
Oh yes, let's talk about that shampoo.
Let's. I thought it would be a good idea to talk about some beauty products today, one in particular, just to kind of let our audience know what we think about them. What do you think about that, Left Brain?
It's good. I won't have much to say about stuff like lipstick and rouge, unfortunately.
Right. Well, today let's talk about the shampoo. I'm assuming you still wash your hair, Left Brain.
I do occasionally wash
Excellent.
My hair.
Excellent. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the Pantene shampoo, specifically the frizzy to smooth shampoo.
Wait, why do we pick Pantene? Are you a shill for Procter & Gamble?
Absolutely not. I have not been employed by Procter & Gamble, but I do rather enjoy their shampoo, I have to say. It's currently what's in my shower. And I will let our audience know that I do switch a bit, and a lot of it is for the purposes of the beauty brands, and also just I like to see what's out there. But I inevitably come back to Pantene shampoo. And one thing I've noticed that they've done recently is sort of changed how they market their shampoo. So it used to be that shampoos were labeled smoothing or, you know, volumizing, but now they're talking about them sort of more of the end benefit. So for instance, the shampoo I'm using is called Frizzy to Smooth, and I kind of like this because that's the result I want. I have frizzy wavy hair and I want my hair to be smooth. They also have shampoos that say flat to volume or dry to moisturize. So it gives the consumer a good understanding of what that shampoo is going to do for you. Now, of course, that's just mostly marketing. I'm assuming the frizzy to smooth shampoo is the same formula as the dry to moisturize shampoo.
Well, do they have bald to fuzzy head?
Bald to fuzzy head?
Yeah. I know a lot of guys who don't have a lot of hair. They want.
Yeah, I don't think it's a miracle grow shampoo,
no.
But you know, I think the way they're labeling their shampoos is pretty clever. And what I like about the Pantene shampoo is I just find it to be very thick, sort of luxurious, good lathering shampoo. Makes my hair feel smooth and clean, of course. So I like it. It's, again, a personal preference, but I think it's a good shampoo. It's a good value, and it's inevitably ends up in my shower when I don't have anything else that I've been trying. So
yeah, Pantene certainly does have some of the best shampoo technology there is. I mean, they have a patent on making it a 2-in-1 formula. So, you know, they don't really call it 2-in-1 formulas, but the Pantene formulas, almost all of them are 2-in-1. They contain a detergent like ammonium lauryl sulfate or sodium lauryl sulfate. And then they'll also contain dimethicone, which is a silicone, and that's going to get on the hair and provide conditioning. This actually was a technology that they used in Pert Plus, you know, the old Pert Plus brand.
Sure, good old Pert Plus.
So then they adapted it to Pantene, and then Pantene really takes off. But the shampoo formula When you test it with consumers on a blinded basis, so if you don't, if it's just in a white bottle and you
right.
don't know if it's
Three
Pantene.
Three-digit code, no branding.
Right. Yeah, it's not with blind people. It's with people.
Right. Yes. For those non-market researchers right. out there, when we say a blind study, it's not with blind people. It
right.
means that it's non-branded.
Exactly. But if you did that, if you just looked at it and you didn't know anything about the product, Pantene, their formula always scores really high versus all the other products you can
right.
do.
Both and salon and non-salon.
Salon and non-salon.
Brands.
So if people close their eyes and use products, they usually will like Pantene the best.
Exactly.
But not everybody. There are formulas that other people will like.
Of course.
And fragrance has a lot to do with it, but the foaming does and the way it leaves your hair. And incidentally, it doesn't leave plastic on your hair. There is no plastic in Pantene.
Right, or wax.
Or
which
wax.
I think is another myth I've heard
There's
on the internet.
No wax. And it won't make your hair fall out either.
Right.
And, you know, it's a decent value. But it's always good to switch up your shampoo, too, just to experience new things. But if
right.
you find one, you know, Pantene is the best-selling formula.
Right. And there is a reason. It's a good product. And I'd also, you know, was previously using Tresemme shampoo, and I switched to Pantene. And I'll probably switch again. But like I said, Pantene is kind of my go-to favorite. So.
The other thing I noticed about Pantene is Procter & Gamble also owns Herbal Essence.
Yes, I was aware of that.
And they use essentially the same shampoos in Herbal Essences
yes.
as they do in Pantene.
Very
so if
same.
You don't like the Pantene fragrance, you could just try an Herbal Essence
Right. You'll
shampoo.
Get a similar experience, different
yeah.
fragrance.
The
so
products.
I personally like the Pantene fragrance, but hey, to each their own. And again, we're not spokespeople for Pantene or Procter & Gamble, but we do get asked quite a bit what products we use and what products we like, and so we thought we'd share. So, you know, again, if you have any comments or questions and want to know other products we use or products you use, please post them on the blog. I think it's time for our beauty quiz.
Time for the quiz.
And today
All
we're
right.
going to switch it up because Left Brain has stumped me every week.
So you're getting a little frustrated.
I'm getting a little annoyed, quite sure. frankly. So I'm going to quiz you today, Left
All right.
Brain.
Let's see what we got here.
All right. Here's the question. And three of these four statements are true. I want you to tell me the statement that is not, okay?
Okay, so what's the fake one?
Exactly. Which one of the following stories about the beauty industry are fake? A, some people hear colors and see sounds. B, men prefer reddish colors more than women. C, excessive vitamin use can lead to heart disease. Or D, flesh-eating fish are used to exfoliate skin.
Huh. They're good ones.
They are. I have a feeling you're going to get it, and I'm going to be annoyed.
So there's the flesh-eating fish. There is the men preferring red.
Yes.
There is...
people hearing colors and seeing
people hearing
sounds.
Colors, yeah.
And the excessive vitamin use.
Excessive vitamin use. Well, I know that... I know about the phenomenon of people hearing sound or hearing sound.
That is a pretty common phenomenon, actually.
The phenomenon of people seeing sounds and hearing sounds, I've heard of that before, so I think that one's probably true. And I also heard about the little fish. You put your toes into a bath of fish, and they eat the stuff around your toes or something.
Gross.
So that just leaves the excessive vitamin use
right.
leading to heart disease and then men preferring red. I don't really know if men prefer red or they don't. And I don't know about the vitamin one, but I'm always skeptical of vitamin stuff, so I think I wouldn't you
just
know,
give me your answer, Left Brain.
All right, I think the vitamin one is probably true, so I think it's the pink, the men preferring red or something like that. I think that's the fake one.
All right. Well, of course, you're right, which is super annoying. But we will discuss all the answers quickly. Some people hear colors and see sounds statement is in fact true, as Left Brain said. This is actually a psychological phenomenon called synesthesia, which actually means that somehow people's sensory systems sort of get mixed up. So they can hear colors and see sounds. So it's just sort of a mixed up way of sensory perception. So it's kind of an unusual phenomenon. But about 1 in 23 people experience this. So it's kind of
I wonder if we have any synesthesiacs in the brain's community.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd love to hear from them. That'd be fascinating. But it's also true that excessive vitamin use can lead to heart disease, which I know sort of warms left brain's heart because he's always a little sketchy on these vitamin supplements and such. So,
well, I think it's an outrage the way the food supplements and vitamin supplements are not regulated
right.
in the United States.
It is ridiculous, and there's a lot of bad claims out there and bad science. So there was actually a study from the University of Utah that showed that excessive levels of the antioxidant glutathione can contribute to heart disease. Now, this has only been done on mice, but we'll have to see if it actually is correlates to humans. But in the meantime, I think left brain would prefer you just eat fruits and vegetables to get your dose of daily vitamins.
That's right.
The flesh-eating fish, I've also heard of this phenomenon. It was actually something done in China where there's these fish that swim in the pool of water and eat the dead skin off your feet.
Are they like barracudas or piranhas or something?
Dr. Fish, and the whole thing sounds really disgusting. As far as men preferring reddish colors more than women, that is actually false. It actually is women who prefer reddish colors over men. So,
yeah, well, you know, it makes sense because women prefer pink, right, over men.
Well, or is that just a stereotype that's embedded due to our society? I don't know. Women like blue too, though, of course, I do love pink, whatever. I'm actually asking for a new pink iPhone cover for Christmas. So I hope Santa's listening too. I think that about wraps up our podcast for this week, Left Brain. Anything else you want to add?
Well, of course, if you haven't got your copy of our latest beauty report about how to save money on cosmetic products, be sure to click the link in the notes to this show.
Yes.
And of course, you should, if you're interested in this sort of thing, follow us on Twitter.
Or Facebook.
Or Facebook, too.
We love Facebook.
We do.
And also remember to post your comments, questions on the blog, beautybrains.com, and join our forum. So,
yeah, there's lots of ways to stay connected with the Beauty Brains, isn't there?
There are, and we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to know what products you're using. And we know that Sarah Bellin loves products. I'm a bit of a product junkie, wouldn't you say, Left Brain?
You are a product junkie, for sure.
Excellent. Thanks again for tuning in. Left Brain and I love doing the podcast, so we enjoy getting your comments and feedback as well. Thanks again for tuning in, and once again, we are reminding you that beauty doesn't have to be brainless.